The Wolfgang, an 18th century style classical sextet, was founded in 1996 in the Twin Cities for the exploration of chamber music from the time of J.S. Bach's son up to the time of Beethoven and Schubert. The six accomplished musicians of the Wolfgang are performing at the Arrowhead Center for the Arts on Saturday, May 24th at 7:30 p.m. We have four of them: Paul Jacobson, Stanley King, Gail Olszewski, and Laura Handler here in the studio with us now, and we're going to talk to them about their group and the concert tomorrow. And Paul Jacobson is going to be the point man here, so I'm going to start with you, Paul.
Very good. It's good to be here.
Welcome. Oh well, welcome all four of you.
Thank you.
We have three microphones here, but there are four of them, so they're going to share. Two of them are going to share a microphone. But at any rate, Paul, as I said, my information is your group was founded in 1996, and I understand it was after you performed in a performance in St. Paul. Maybe you can tell us about that performance and how that led to the group that's sitting here tonight.
Well, it was for the Schubert Club, and Stanley here, who was our oboist, was at that point, I believe, the musical advisor to the Schubert Club for programming. And we did a program for them that was going to be entitled, I think, Sons of a Bach. But I think we cleaned it up. As many times happens, a fun first performance often leads to a going ensemble. And that's exactly what happened to us, because there was such a rich body of repertory for us to explore. And one of the principal works, a group of works that we do, is by one of Bach's sons, a group of sextets, or quintets actually, for exactly our instrumentation: flute, oboe, violin, viola, and a basso continuo, which can be any number of bass instruments. In our case, it's a forte piano, an 18th century form of piano, and a violoncello. And this group of quintets were composed for six very talented musicians in the Mannheim Orchestra around 1772, was it? Stanley, thereabouts.
Sure, somewhere in there.
Mannheim, Germany, we're talking about.
And they're just a phenomenal group of pieces. And sometimes a piece of music gives the impetus for an ensemble. And that was kind of a magical time, because at the time that J.C. Bach, Johann Christian Bach, the London Bach, brought this package of quintets for an occasion in Mannheim, another composer came to the scene at the same time, and that was the younger Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Hmm. And so those two composers have really been sort of our spirit, I think.
Yeah, and you've got actually, at least chronologically, a fairly narrow span of years that you focus on for the music, right?
It is. From the Gallant era, or the transitional era after the Baroque, up into the very early classical era, and we even sometimes go as far as Beethoven, but I think Mozart and which we're doing tomorrow night is at the core of what we love to do. Mozart and J.C. Bach,
and your first concert apparently was pretty successful, right?
I mean, it was, yeah. It was successful enough to make us feel that we could.
So what
did
you look around and said, "Well, let's do this again"?
Yeah.
And Stanley, were you the guy that got that first concert going?
I was. I was an artist in residence at the Schubert Club, and one of the things that I did was I organized different ensembles to play on a noontime series that they have in what they call the courtroom. So it's called the Courtroom Concert Series. It's a noontime series. Hmm. And so I just thought, well, these were interesting looking pieces, and I thought it'd be fun to explore that repertory. And so that's what we did.
And how did you know how were you acquainted with these musicians?
Well, the instruments we play in this group are classical period instruments. So they are instruments from that narrow time frame you spoke of. But we all play modern instruments. We also play on instruments from the Baroque era. And all of us, with the exception of Gail, perform in a Baroque chamber orchestra in the Twin Cities called Lyra Baroque Orchestra. And we've all performed with Gail on a number of other occasions in different sorts of ensembles. So we all knew each other because we're all professional musicians in the Twin Cities. And
all right, let's talk a little bit about these instruments from each of you, maybe starting with you, Gail. Why don't you tell us what instrument you play and, you know, what part of history of music did it play?
I play the piano. The piano that I'm, particular instrument that I'm playing is called, they call it a forte piano, but really anything that has the action of a hammer hitting a string is a type of piano. The one that I'm playing is a replica of a 1785 Viennese instrument, and it's basically a smaller version of our modern grand. It's the piano came about around 1690. That was the first viable piano, and it came about because people got frustrated with the limitations of the harpsichord. You couldn't vary the volume by touch, you know, like you could on other instruments.
Why not?
Well, because the harpsichord, the sound is produced by a string being plucked.
I see.
Once the string is plucked, that's it. Mm-hmm. And an organ, you press a key and whatever sound comes out is whatever stop it is. Mm-hmm. And you can't vary the volume by your fingers. So people wanted a keyboard instrument that you could do that with. And so it started, Bartolomeo Cristofori is credited with the first viable piano, you know, or forte piano or piano forte or whatever. It's the
Did
same.
Did they call it that?
They could have called, well, they could have called it the loud soft, but instead
the
they called
loud soft.
It the forte piano.
Actually,
right.
It has a very, very long name. It translates out to keyboard instrument that can play both loud and soft. So piano forte or forte piano is actually a shortened version of that.
Oh, it's not an acronym, is it? Forte? No, that's
no.
Word
for no, forte
Italian
is
for
Italian.
Loud.
Yeah, louder, right. Bass, actually right. Strong is what it means.
Okay.
Strong, and piano does mean soft.
Okay.
And so our modern version that we have, basically pianos throughout their development got bigger, you know, more notes. Mine has quite a limited range compared to the one we have. Mine has maybe 61 keys as opposed to 88. Huh. And it's, if you think of it, it's kind of like the computer, you know, as they got more advanced, they got smaller, pianos got bigger.
Well, computers got more powerful.
And so did pianos. So did pianos,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. Well, do you have black and white keys on there or just?
No. Well, they're, they are contrasting colors, but actually what the white keys are on mine, they're wood color, they're dark, and the sharps are actually white.
Oh.
You know, it was fashion. It depended on, you know, really, what country it came from.
So who built the piano that you play?
His name is Paul McNulty. He's a very fine builder, who now lives in the Czech Republic, and it was built from a kit. Actually, that was from the Zuckerman Company in Boston, which they don't make anymore because it was too complicated and people were having too many problems.
I assume there are in existence some original pianofortes.
Oh, yes, yeah. There are. But
that's true for all of our instruments.
Yes.
Okay.
That in general, the forte pianists and harpsichordists and wind instrument players generally play reproductions of early instruments if you're playing period instruments. Whereas the string players, the strings strings tend to get better with age, as we've been told. And so string players always hanker to have a real 17th or 18th century instrument.
Well, let me ask you, Laura, what, why don't you pull the microphone over there and you tell me what you play a string instrument.
Well, I'm the cellist with the group.
Oh,
so,
okay. Yep, the string.
And my cello is actually an 1810 German cello. We don't know who made it, but The person who looked at it said he could narrow it down to the area of Germany it was from.
Really?
And it is different from a modern cello, the one that you would hear played in the Minnesota Orchestra or the Duluth Symphony. The most obvious difference is that I don't use an end pin, which is the spike that goes from the instrument into the floor. Instead, I kind of bring my feet together and kind of make a cradle with my legs, and then the cello rests in that. Another difference between a Baroque or classical cello and a modern instrument is that we use gut strings on the top two strings. So it's unwound gut, and it's actually made from sheep intestines. Very well cleaned. They're cleaned really well, but it's sheep intestines.
not 1810 vintage.
No, newer than that. So the sound, it makes the sound very, very different. And the bottom strings are metal-wound strings, but metal-wound strings were first developed in the late 1600s, so they've been around for quite a while. The fingerboard is shorter. The bridge is flatter. There's not, the pitch is lower. We don't tune to A440, which is what Duluth Symphony would tune to. We tune to A430, so there's a little bit less tension, fewer... The pitch sounds lower, just a little bit lower than modern pitch.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. And it means that there's less tension on the instrument, so it vibrates differently.
The tension is always among the musicians, not
right, yeah, right, yeah, I'm sure. Okay, let's turn to you, Paul, and have you tell me what you play and what its vintage is.
I play a classical flute that's made out of ebony and has six keys. It's modeled after an instrument maker by the name of Grenzer, who lived in Dresden, I believe. The flute was very much in flux in the 18th century. In the 17th century, the French had turned a one-piece, basically a military instrument, into a three- and then a four-piece instrument with one key. And that was the key that provided the flute music for the next century plus. And during the course of the 18th century, they kept adding keys to it to reinforce this note and that note and make that note sweeter and that note more in tune. And so for Mozart would have used flutes that were playing with one key or with four keys, sometimes with six keys. Mine happens to be six keys.
How do you change the note without using a key?
The holes of the flute without any keys are roughly in D major, and you can use fancy cross fingerings to make flats and sharps, or to make overtones, but use the keys to help you out in difficult situations and to make some notes stronger. So the keys don't make it necessarily easier to play, but it makes it more successful versatile. In some cases, okay. More versatile.
This is all really intriguing. I'm actually dying to hear one of these songs.
That's right. We've got to do that. Yeah. I was just going to interrupt and say, tell our listeners that we are speaking to the classical sextet called the Wolfgang. We're performing tomorrow at, actually, we're talking to four of the sextet. They're performing tomorrow at the Arrowhead Center for the Arts at 7:30, and we do have a couple of pieces of yours that we're going to play. You can maybe, Paul, introduce them if you would.
Sure. The first one is from a flute quartet.
We're only going to play the first one first, and then we'll take a little break and we'll come back.
So the first one is by Wolfgang, yeah. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, and it's a flute quartet in A major. Flute quartet in that era meant flute plus three string players. Not four flutes. And this was a quartet that was made up of popular tunes of the day, and he composed it one night for a group of friends and brought it over. And so it's a very lighthearted piece. And the first piece is a tune composed by one of his publishers called On die Natur, On Nature. And he turned it into the first movement of this flute quartet.
Okay,
in
great.
A major. Would you like to?
Yes.
Hear it?
And is this the? Can I confirm? Is this the first track?
This is track one.
All right.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Mozart, track one.
All right. Here we go. ¶¶
Well, that was only we were only able to take time for a portion of that, but it was
that was
beautiful.
A little nibble of that quartet.
Beautiful, yeah,
very beautiful.
Oh yeah,
thank you.
Now, is that one piece that you might be playing tomorrow or not?
No, we are playing a flute quartet tomorrow, as well as pieces for the full ensemble. Tomorrow is unusual because it's all Mozart and it's all miniatures. Everything we're doing tomorrow are transcriptions of orchestral pieces by Mozart and even an opera. The first piece is a quartet, which is a compression of the whole opera, The Magic Flute, into a flute quartet. And then we're doing two vocal pieces with Erica Turnus, who is from Grand Marais.
Well, there's also the Fantasy, though.
Or the forte piano
Rondo,
Fantasy.
The Rondo.
Or the Rondo, rather.
Yes.
Will be and that's not.
That is not a transcription.
That is not. That's the real thing. And we'll be playing one movement from one of these J.C. Bach quintets that I mentioned that are so dear to us, Opus 11 quintets. And one of the cuts you're going to hear is from that particular quintet, but it's the first movement of the J.C. Bach Opus 11 quintets. And tomorrow night, we might, if the people clap enough, we're going to play a middle movement as an encore. But yeah, there it is. I said it.
Do you want to play that Bach piece now,
yeah,
or do you want to wait for? I'm happy
I think that would be fine.
Let me just ask one more thing here.
Sure.
What would Wolfgang himself think of the transcription of The Magic Flute?
Well, actually, Mozart had said in a letter to his dad, "I should hurry and get a transcription or a harmonimusik version of The Magic Flute into publication before anyone else does, because that was a good moneymaker. You published it.
It was a very common thing for people to do in those.
So that was a version of a CD. That's how you brought music home, was by putting it into miniature form, and then either you could do it with friends, or it was too difficult, and you were a nobility, you could have your professional musicians do it for you. But unfortunately, before Mozart could publish one or write one, he died. I mean, he died 2 months after writing The Magic Flute and had never had a chance to make this transcription for a small ensemble.
Remind us again how old he was when he died.
He was 35, and that's one of the great tragedies of musical history.
Yeah. Well, we're going to play a Bach piece. J.C. Bach, mm-hmm. Is that what it is?
Yes.
Right.
And you want to describe that just a little bit?
It's in this era called Gallant, which is sort of Baroque on steroids, where the beauty of the melody becomes all important, and harmony becomes simplified, and fugues are old fashioned, and so it's a new style of playing. It was what was in vogue around 1760 and 70.
It's sort of 18th century easy listening music.
Yeah, just delightful music.
It comes from that decadent Italian influence.
Yeah, and it doesn't have the Lutheran headiness of J.S. Bach.
Yeah, okay, yeah, on that note, yeah. Here it is.
Let's hear a bit of it. That's beautiful.
That is beautiful. I just have to say, this might be the most classical music that has ever been played on this show.
On the Roadhouse. And I am so appreciative of it.
And don't you want to do more?
Yes, it's fabulous.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad you guys know how to have a good time here.
Well, don't you think the name The Wolfgang works for a program like this?
I'm a word person and a word game person, so I immediately had a big smile when I read that press release.
I knew you guys weren't going to be totally serious with the Wolfgang, but you are serious. I mean, because your music is very serious and very beautiful. And
thank you.
Very nice to have you up here. And Stanley, I want to get back to you because I didn't get to talk to you about what instrument you play.
Well, I play, for this group, I play a classical period oboe. So it's an instrument from the late 18th century. Like Paul's flute, my oboe that I play has a limited number of keys on it, just two. There are six basic finger holes on the front. The third and the fourth one are double holes. So there's two tiny little holes. And if I want to make a chromatic, I slide my finger over and uncover one of the holes, which is a little tricky. And I also use what we call cross-fingering. So that's, for instance, if you cover hole one and hole three and leave hole two open, sometimes that's called a forked fingering or a cross-fingering, it sometimes can have a slightly more covered sound. So the scale is maybe not quite as even as on the modern instrument. And all of the instruments we play from the 18th century are softer than their modern counterparts. One of the things in the evolution of music is that as the middle class came up, more people wanted to go to hear concerts. Orchestras got bigger, concert halls got bigger, and instruments had to get louder. And so that's part of how instruments changed and developed over time.
Did the changes in the modern instrument that you play, that the modern version of the instrument that you play, did they make it more difficult to play, easier to play?
Some things are more difficult, some things are easier. Mm-hmm. The bore of the instrument that forms the tone quality of the instrument is somewhat larger than on the modern instrument, so it's slightly less resistant. But a lot of that has to do with how I might make my reed. So I can make a reed that's really light and easy blowing, and I can make a reed that's a little more resistant or a lot more resistant. And oboe players of all sorts have reeds of all sorts.
The reed is a big deal.
The reed is Don't get me started on that.
No, please.
And my wife is listening to this broadcast, and she's saying, don't get him started.
No, not reeds.
Thank you, Dick, for summing that up.
It is a big deal, yeah.
We have to wind it up fairly soon here, but what is it about the music of Mozart era that makes it last so lasting and still loved? I mean, who wants to try that one?
That's the hardest question you've asked us, of course. Right?
Yeah.
Well, it's well written, well constructed. It suits the instruments that we're playing. It was written for these instruments. And people recognize quality, not just in Mozart, but in anything, if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, we're listening to music that was composed 200 plus years ago. That's pretty interesting.
One of the things about Mozart's music is that he communicates mood so incredibly well. You feel when you're listening to Mozart, you feel joyful or you feel sad or angry, or with the Queen of the Night aria from the Magic Flute tomorrow night with Erica singing it, you'll feel all of hell's wrath come thundering down on you. Mozart could put that into the precisely the right number of notes.
And that's that transcription that is, I think that's the one you just were mentioning, is a premiere, is it not? Yes. Or is that the other one?
The transcription is a premiere. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
Actually, two of the transcriptions are premieres that we're doing. So.
The Exultate Jubilate and that particular aria didn't exist in modern form for our ensemble plus soprano.
Yeah.
So we squeezed it down. I wrote the transcriptions, and the Wolfgang is graciously playing them. So,
all right. Well, we have to move along right now, but it was very fun to talk to you on a very relaxed casual basis here and hear a lot of very interesting things that you had to tell us about your instruments and the music you play.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's really fun to be here.